liberty and justice for all.
May we have the roll call?
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Morgan?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Weber?
Here.
Councilmember Pepper?
Here.
Commissioner LaConte?
Here.
Commissioner Ammons?
Here.
Commissioner Senekal?
Here.
Commissioner McCain?
Here.
Commissioner Ekberg?
Here.
Commissioner Amber?
Present.
Okay, Barbara, if you want to go right ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. At our last meeting, we got most of the way through the land use element and had a really great discussion and a lot of edits that I will be making. I didn't bring the revised copy tonight because I figured we really should finish it and so that we don't want too many versions out there. But so tonight's agenda is for us to finish going through that element, that policy piece, and what you've received is a set of maps to help us work through that, and also the land use appendix. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on the land use appendix, but I did want to just sort of talk briefly about it, and unless someone has, you know, read it and they really want to comment on it, what the purpose of this appendix is really to provide the contextual information for the element, for the goals and the policies. And a lot of that is text that was removed from the comprehensive plan land use chapter because it wasn't necessary to have it in that policy part of the document. So, it goes over the land use history and the planning area, the land use planning area. It talks about the community design and the character and goes into sort of this, the development concepts that all frame the policy language in the element itself. So what I tried to do in this is to really put some definition to what do we mean by the community character, because we've talked a lot about that and how compact form, incremental development, pedestrian scale, and these meeting and socializing opportunities, and those you'll see in the element itself. We also have this overall development concept where we have open space as part of it, the in-city forest as part of it, historic preservation, residential development, and commercial development. So, and I think probably what I just want to pull your attention to that will be useful for the discussion that we have tonight are the tables at the very end of the appendix, table 5.1. It's on page 10 of 11 in this document. And it is just it's the chart for the land use categories next to the zoning district, and it shows you the densities and building intensities out of the code for those categories, and it also shows us the amount of land in the city that is currently designated for those uses. So I think it's helpful to see that with the MPD overlay, you know, that's 43% of our land base has got the MPD overlay, and the low density residential LDR category, that's where you have your zones for the R4 and R6. You can see that the R4 makes up just under 30% of our land use in the city, the R6 under 4%, and then that MDR8, which is where we allow for more density and multifamily structures, is only 3.2%. Town commercial, not very much of that. We're going to talk about that with these maps. The community commercial, almost 4%, and neighborhood commercial, because those the town commercial and the neighborhood commercial are sort of specific areas that we'll talk about and look at that. And then you've got industrial, which is the building park and industrial park. It's a conglomeration of light industrial and heavy industrial. I think that in the vision itself and the overall idea is that it would be more light manufacturing types of uses. But we've got a map that shows where those are located to talk about tonight. But that's under 10% of the land. And then the public areas, your schools, government buildings, parks, and things like that. This table could change if we decide that we're going to make some changes when we get through the analysis apart on the land use. The next table, 5.2, I think would be alarming for people to look at. So I wanted to have a little discussion about that, if I could. The total population you see here from 2000 to the 2035, which is our planning horizon. Remember, we're required to plan for that 20-year period for Growth Management Act. And our city size, you can see it crept up as we made annexations. And the bottom line, the population density, with the 2035 projection of 19,262 people to accommodate, or not to accommodate, actually, it's the reverse. In most places, you're planning because you know that there are growth projections that you have to accommodate. In this case, we have a development agreement, and we have basically a contract. So it makes sense that we would anticipate the extra people to fill those homes that are being planned. And to get to that number, the consultants that we had working on the comp plan, primarily DKS, worked with Puget Sound Regional Council, PSRC, because they didn't recognize the MPDs. They hadn't done their modeling update after the city adopted the development agreement and approved the MPDs, and you know they went through and were upheld. So we have to be consistent with what is on the ground going to happen, you know, to the best of our knowledge, because we've got a contractual obligation to allow that to happen. We have to make sure that our plan is consistent with that. So if we look at 19,000 people and then we look at that, oh my gosh, that population density is 2,448 people a square mile. I'd like to just break that down for you. What that comes down to is there's 640 acres in a square mile. You convert that to square feet. You divide the square feet by that 2,448 people. Your average lot size you'd anticipate is 11,388 or 0.26, a quarter of an acre lot size. So while that looks like really, really dense, it would end up being a quarter acre lot size average. So I just thought that might be useful to explain to all of you.
But is that a quarter acre on the entire, within that entire city limit, or is that quarter acre of allowable building area?
That is an average lot size at this people per density calculation. So it's not going to be an even peanut butter spread, no.
No, but I mean, are the people per square foot is that based on the entire city limits, mm-hmm. or is that based on actual building, actual land that is available for building, not including open spaces or lakes or highways?
Right. It's not cutting that open space. It is like a gross calculation citywide, right? So that quarter acre
that includes.
It doesn't include, like, if you had to have the quarter acre in this calculation, in this projection, doesn't include the amount of land you would subtract for open space or setbacks, right of way.
Or lakes or area.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So it could be, you know.
It's just developable, land that's being developed, not land that's been
Well, the square.
Or land is already developed.
Okay, we didn't add the lake in, if that's what you're wondering. This is land. This is calculated out of the land base. Land base, not including the water.
Okay, well, what I was thinking was that you took a map of Black Diamond, like this map,
mm-hmm.
and said that is, I have no idea how many acres that is.
It's 4,000, yeah.
And then you divided 2,400 or 19,000 people by just this large chunk. That works out to a quarter acre per person, whereas you're going to have, this is going to be not allowable. And
oh, it doesn't, I mean, it's sort of like what you described. So the 41,265 acres that we use to calculate are land acres.
Okay, but not all of those are buildings.
There would probably be some restrictions, but, you know, that gets, you've got mitigations and, you know, you're going to have smaller lots, some smaller lots to accommodate. So, but it doesn't, but it is land base, land area miles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Eckert, on that page, was that page 10?
Mm-hmm.
My that 41,000 number, that's much, that's, you've got an extra digit.
Oh, thank you.
Are those supposed to, it looks like those.
It's 4,000.
If you add
right.
them up, it's going to be 4,000 something.
Well, it is 4,000, and it, pardon me, we have 4,000. I don't know. We've got the decimal point in the wrong place, and we didn't round up. Thank you. It's 4,100 acres is what we have in the city. Yeah. No. Good. That's pretty important. Thank you.
Well, yes. Similarly, this, in that first paragraph on page 11. Approximately 600 units per acre is a human a unit in this case.
I'm sorry, ask me again.
Yeah. Is a human a unit in this last sentence phrase? And that
600
first paragraph
units per acre. Units are dwelling.
Because it says approximately 600 units per acre to 2,400 units per acre, and I'm going, is that a unit? Is it? Is a unit a human or what?
Yeah, that is six. It's really, that really isn't very clear, though. Because
but
we're.
If you look at the chart, it seems we're going from 580 units per acre to 2,448 per acre.
Persons. Okay.
No,
units
per mile.
Persons per square mile. So, yeah, I guess persons in that case.
Well, but this says approximately 600 units per acre to 2,400 units per acre.
The population quadruple, so we're talking about the
population density.
So we are still talking population, not
so these units
residential.
That says here on the thing are actually people.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the units needs to be rewritten. I mean, when I see units also, I think of dwelling units. Yeah. Okay, we'll fix that.
Councilmember Pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was interested when the three cities met, when we have our meeting, and I was interested, we're a kind of a smaller city compared to the two of them, so I looked up the square mileage of Covington and Maple Valley and Black Diamond, and they are comparable in terms of square mileage.
Hmm.
And when you think about, they have population density now of, I think, Maple Valley has approximately 22,000 residents, and Covington has like 23,000 and rising because of all the building that they're doing.
Right.
So if you want to visualize what, and that comes out to about 2,500 people per square acre, and that's very similar to this. So if you want to visualize what is going to happen to Black Diamond, that might be a point of reference.
Yeah,
where did
great.
I get those figures from was I looked it up.
Yeah.
I just went online and looked it up. But I just think that for us as the small town that has to make these decisions when we're growing up to the numbers listed here, we have to really be able to visualize what are we going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you drive through Covington, as you drive through Maple Valley, think about it, mm-hmm. you know, because right now we have about,
well, here it says 580
yeah. per.
Big difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so you're what that does to your community, I think that that's a way to visualize it if you want to think about it. So I put that out there.
Yeah, no, I think that's
a comparison.
That's a great comparison. And I think one thing that we have in our favor is that, particularly Covington, I'm not too sure about Maple Valley, is that we have our old town. We have these areas that, so that density, I mean, we can look at where that density ought to go instead of, in Covington's sake, it just kind of goes and goes and goes everywhere. But we have the ability to, we know a lot of density is going to go and a lot of this is going to go in the master plan development villages. So it's not going to necessarily, I mean, we don't have to lose the fabric of Black Diamond. I don't think that, you know.
Thank you, Mr. McCain. And I think it's important to keep that context, that 20-year plan in mind. Mm-hmm. And probably through my real estate career, the best blessing that we have here in Black Diamond is a master plan where you can set aside the appropriate connections, open space, public access spots, which, of course, they really don't have in Maple Valley, and they have done a somewhat better job in Covington. So it's going to look very different over the next few years, in my opinion.
That's Councilmember Weber. In the last paragraph, the last sentence, 11 of 11,
uh-huh.
same page we've been on,
yeah.
right at the bottom. Where it says vested permits, to me that seems a little misleading because not every permit has vested for the MPD, correct?
No, and that's something that the two master plan development permits, the villages in Lawson Hills, the master plan development permit, they're vested. So within that, there are all of these plats that have to go through the process, and they're called the implementing phases. Those have not been, I mean, we've got two vested preliminary plats now, but that umbrella, that master plan development permit approval, it vested, and the development agreement that the city signed, it is a contract that as long as these things, when they come, the implementing phases come along, they're consistent in meeting the regulations and the standards that they have to meet, they should be allowed to go ahead and get approval. That's really different because it's been really hard for me to even get my head wrapped around in terms of the planner side is, you know, the master plan development is this huge conceptual, they call it programmatic permit, but it is a permit that vested for them to do this build out. And so then because the hearing examiner said, well, this is so conceptual, you still must see. He made this condition that not necessarily would when the master plan or a planned unit development by state law, when it goes through this process and gets to the end, or they don't always have to go back and permit for each implementing phase. But because the hearing examiner felt that this was a real high level programmatic approach that they would need to come in just to make sure that every implementing phase meets the conditions of approval. So, yeah. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about, because we're going to kind of we're going to get into this with the, and you guys may already have this under your belt, but sometimes people, they don't. So the difference between your land use and your zoning maps. We're talking about our land use map, future land use map. And those are big categories that say we would like to see generally residential, low density residential or commercial. but you then turn those categories into your zoning designation. So they're not really the same thing. The comp plan map itself and the future land use designations that we have in this figure, big figure map, that's really putting the policies onto a map. But it's when you create the zoning map and adopt that by ordinance, that's your legal document. And then in your development, your regulations for those zones, and you say, what's the setback? How high can the building be? What, you know, what kind of things are actually going to go there? So I just wanted to make sure that we kind of all understand that. Because in Black Diamond, and it's not usually, we've got a pretty easy system where what the comp plan shows is pretty much what the zoning translated into the zone. And that isn't always so. But they are two different things. So are we ready to?
I have one more question.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. Can you explain, so this is a forecast that basically is like a 20-year forecast.
Right.
Can you explain the difference between the 15 versus the 20? Because it's my understanding that at 15 years, the developer would have to come back to the city for the other 5 years to
exactly
potentially.
Right. So what we know, so this in this planning document, in this horizon, the state requires us to look out 20 years to do this 20-year long-range plan. So in that, we have to acknowledge the master plan development and plan accordingly for it in the 20-year vision. As we know, this is not a static document. It's supposed to change. We've got annual amendments that the public, planning commissioners, council members can make on an annual, one-time annual basis. And plus the state every 7 years requires us to open it up again. So if in fact at the end of that 15-year period the development agreement terminates and they've done all the development they're going to do and it didn't meet the projection, we're going to have to go back and change this. But we have to go with it now because it's anticipated.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, but once the permit expires, it expires, and then we have to adjust this. Just like if you had either a growth boom or you had something, you're planning for these projections, but they're really your best guess of what's going to happen in the future. And as you realize that it didn't happen, or it happened more than you thought it would, you just have to constantly go through and re-update it and amend it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this in itself isn't a pro-growth plan. I think I saw something where people were thinking that we were, because we have to acknowledge this, that this was a pro-growth plan, but it's not. It's just attempting to be above board with the state and to put in this and plan for what may happen in the horizon based on some pretty solid, a contract's a contract. So we have to do, we want to do it well, right?
That was a resounding approval.
We just want to do it well, that's all. And so that's where we'll get into this policy part of it. We had been talking about the different land use designations, and we got to the commercial, and then we decided that we'd just table that and finish it another day, because my real question, and I'd like for us, of course, to go through page 11 is where we left off. I'd like us to go through the rest of the element, but also to talk a little bit about the existing commercial designations, where they're at, in the context of this last figure 5-1 map, this big map. This is the city's future land use map right now. And my question for you, in the master plan development, it's a little faded, and I apologize, but you see where there's kind of a purpley right here along Black Diamond Road, purpley with the cross hatching, and up near 169 at the tip of the where the Lawson Master Plan development, another purpley. We have that on our comp plan map as mixed use, a mixed use designation. We never adopted any mixed use zone, and so we need to decide how we're going to deal with that. So one of the things that I thought we might do after we talk through what the town center commercial, community commercial, and neighborhood commercial is, it's my thought that that the town center commercial, first of all three of those categories are essentially a mixed use category. They allow, which means they allow commercial and residential development to occur.
Could you repeat those three again, please?
Sure. Town center commercial, the TC, neighborhood commercial, the NC, and community commercial, the CC.
Oh, I'm looking at the map instead of the...
Yeah. Well, it's good to look at them both together, too, because we needed to know where these things were at. Yeah, when we talk about it. So the town center commercial is, right now, it is the red along third, on either side of third. Oh, no, it isn't. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's the community. Town center. My apologies. So the town center is this kind of goldenrod. That's where it's supposed to recognize the pattern in historic old town. Yeah, the antique store, community focal point. We say in here that it reflected by the designation as a social and cultural heart of the community. Mixed uses should be encouraged, and existing residential use is allowed to continue. So this town center commercial is just a very specialized little area, because when it was thought of, it was, well, this is old town, and this is where we're going to,
Councilmember Deedy, so my understanding on mixed use, does that mean that, like, light industrial is not allowed down there, right?
Right.
So no welding shop or something like that.
Right. That's correct.
So the commercial... It's not supposed to be, and nor is it supposed to be large-scale commercial. It's supposed to be smaller businesses. But the list of uses is in the zoning code for this area it's pretty open. You know, retail, commercial, services, and then the code itself limits the size, so that you're not getting huge Walmarts or something like that. There's not much of it in this area. In fact, in the town center commercial, we have 15.5 acres. 15.5 acres is what that area totals. And so then the community commercial is where you're supposed to see your larger scale. And that community commercial area on this, it's the dark brown. Do you see it goes on either side of 169? And then there's a little bit of it you can see that carries down along third in front of the historic area. And then that's where you see in our description of it that it's larger community scale centers outside of town center, supposed to be serving the needs more of the surrounding area, as opposed to town center is supposed to be serving the needs just of kind of this little neighborhood area. Community commercial is located on our maps to be oriented to the traveling public. That's why it's along, you know, 169. And you would see bigger things there, restaurants, motels. But again, it still allows for residential mixed-use development.
Mm-hmm.
What am I? I'm not a
Planning Commissioner Amber. Let's see. We're just saying, if I caught it correctly, that the town center commercial is more focused on just that tiny little community.
When it was adopted, that's kind of, I think, what the vision was for that category.
Okay.
Right or wrong, but that's, yeah.
Okay, because that seems like that is supposed to be more of a general draw from the whole area.
Yes. Yeah. I see it that way, and that's why I think that instead of creating a new zoning designation for these areas in the MPVs, I think they ought to be town center commercial designation, because the development agreement, basically it says, okay, well, we're going to have these commercial, mixed-use commercial areas right here. And then they said, okay, it's mixed use, but we need to figure out how to be consistent.
Okay, and then I have another question. On this chart on 5, the chart, What is the acronym FAR?
Oh, that is, it's the area ratio for how much can the building footprint take up of the lot.
Okay. So town center, limited by development standards, FAR 1.0 and FAR 2.0 with residential. What does your FAR mean with that?
Well, so it's your footprint, if you're just a commercial, is going to be smaller, and you get more.
FAR 1 means that one building can take up
so much square feet
of actual ground space.
Yes.
But then we have to come up with a height standard. Then.
Yes, that's right. Which we do have in our code, so that you could maximize it if you have a residential component.
Okay, so an FAR 2 would then be two buildings per lot?
No, because you're still going to be restricted by the ground, by the area. So it would mean you would go up.
Double the height?
Mm-hmm. Possibly, yes. Mm-hmm. Floor area. Floor area ratio.
Yeah.
Yes. Floor area ratio.
That's
what it is. So, thanks, Brenda.
I have a question. It's Councilmember Edelman. The North Triangle, that is the MPD Triangle plus mixed use, mm-hmm. I thought that was strictly commercial. There was not going to be any mixed use. I guess maybe I need a better definition of what mixed use is, because to me mixed use is maybe retail on the bottom floor and apartments above. Is that the
right
correct assumption?
Yes.
Yeah,
I don't know that that was the intent. I have the understanding that that was all supposed to be just commercial, not mixed use. I don't know about the villages, but the other one, I don't know that there was no intent for there to be any housing up there of any variety. And that was one of the big deals with the Enumclaw School District when they were trying to take that area away from the Tahoma School District. And one of the things that was mentioned is that there will be no people living there. That's just commercial. So I think that needs to maybe be addressed somewhere.
I think that's true, too, because when we were having the discussions with the Enumclaw School District and the Tahoma School District, the point was there was going to be no residents in that area. Mm-hmm. So that would make it community commercial, wouldn't it?
You may want to have something.
Commissioner Amber. And that rectangle below that triangle, mm-hmm. That, from my understanding, was supposed to be where the industrial park was supposed to be.
So, there was never supposed to be any in that whole part of that section was designated the villages, and I've got one right here. And one of them's designated for Lawson Hills. That's the way they divided up the MPDs.
So when I
right, wrong, or indifferent, which I think is a bit ridiculous, but that's the way they did it.
So when I read through the record, they weren't that specific in the record. I mean, it was just that they were planning for commercial in those areas. But I printed out with this one. Let's turn to this one because this shows their intent. This is from the this is the land use plan. This one right here. From the master plan development, the development agreement.
The school district was going to take was the Arrow part of it.
Okay.
And that is commercial.
The triangle, and that's commercial.
And that's commercial.
So you can see in that triangle. Oh, okay. So
yeah,
what?
You look at that,
yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah.
Just the triangle
it
part,
is,
okay. And the other part's residential.
So this shows the color is that it's commercial office retail. So this inset. So we'll take the inset part first, which is the triangle. Their land use that they put in the plan and that went through the record is that it would be commercial, office, retail, and then there's a little high-density residential even there on the fringe. It's hard to see the colors. They're washed out. But you've got this pink over here and this orange over here.
But that's not part of the area that was disputed. The only part that was disputed is the
north
part of it. So
that triangle section.
So you can see that it's just as Commissioner Amber pointed out, it's just a line. It looks like it really the commercial area is only supposed to be this rectangle.
Correct.
And so this then should be taken if I'm hearing everybody right, and based on that map, we should take this out of mixed use. And then this should be public for the schools. Is that
No.
This is residential right here.
No.
What?
Commercial. That's all commercial.
Not according to this, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Well,
are you saying there is no residential in that area, or the dispute would have never held?
Well,
look at the inset.
It doesn't have any development going on there at all.
Right.
But that was the intent when the development agreement was signed, that would be commercial.
Okay. So we're back to, I guess,
but
no,
not
just you.
Should this be
but this whole section is one piece of land. So mm-hmm. If it's one piece of land, it is mixed use. Because it's the whole arrow. It's not just the top. So it is mixed use, but you could divide it up into being residential and commercial. You could divide it.
But if we do, on this one, if we make it community commercial, if you look at our, maybe it makes more sense to make that part community commercial. But that would be larger. I don't know if that really fits the intent. I mean, they were so vague, and the record just says these are going to be commercial mixed-use areas. So
Barb, do you know what does it say in this pink area? All of these words that we can't read. Do you know?
Those are lots.
Oh, those are the lot numbers. Those are the development parcels.
So
right.
This is residential.
Mm-hmm.
So you could divide that piece up and make the top part commercial and the bottom part residential. And that would solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. But I thought
that whole thing
base
is pink.
But it's two separate master plan developments.
one, the triangle section is one, and I don't remember now off the top of my head.
That's
one of them is the villages, Lawson. One of them is Lawson.
The triangle is Lawson.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Well, isn't that whole piece Lawson, even the bottom part is residential?
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so well, just the triangle.
It was some weird thing that they pushed up to get their commercial.
So, okay.
That's not that whole shaded area that we're discussing. The base of the arrow and the head of the arrow.
I should have printed out the Lawsons. See, this is from the villages map, and I should have printed out the Lawsons to see how they colored that peak, what they put, what land use they put in that peak.
I thought that whole chunk was supposed to be heavy commercial. Is that nobody wanted the visual of warehouses and welding shops and things like that. As you drive on, they wanted that tucked off back out of sight. And so that whole triangle, if I remember correctly, was supposedly that was where the heavy industry was supposed to be.
What I'll do is I'll go back, and it's simple enough to look at the land use plan map that looks like this, that's just for Lawson. Oh, you have it? Did you pull it up? This is our city's comp plan. Yeah. So, yeah, that shows it. I can't tell what she's looking at.
It was the...
Is it the Lawson MPD?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what, can you zoom in on because it was a green color, whatever that is. I think you might be right. That might be, we just need to change that part of the peak to industrial, if that's what it's now. So we have more than, I guess, if in fact that just that triangle part that's part of the Lawson MPD, if it shows up industrial if it shows up industrial, that's easy enough to change it. But we still have to deal with the lower portion that's part of the villages that, according to this, has commercial office retail on the one side of it. And on the west side of, I don't know, that's the arrow, mm-hmm. I guess we'll say. The west side of the arrow, it says it's commercial
right,
office,
right, yeah,
retail.
Yeah, yeah.
The east side says high density residential. Our comp plan says mixed use.
So is that correct? And mixed use, if we have those three uses going on in that arrow piece?
Well, if the question is, we don't have a zone for mixed use. We didn't create a zone for mixed use when we adopted the land use map.
It just looks like residential if you look at that bottom part.
It looks like it's a commercial planning, though, just recognizing the ecosystem. They don't have to all be lined up.
Well, see, I'm seeing all.
That's not on 169, though. If you
correct.
Look at that, it's off of 169.
It's
tucked in.
Right.
And so it would seem to me that it would be residential. Residential because they aren't on 169. If you look at this map, 169 is over here. They're behind residential property.
Oh, all right, you guys. If you're looking at the inset.
Yeah.
See where it says Highway 169, and it's coming south.
Yep.
That's where the Diamond Glen little housing development
yep.
is.
Yep.
That all is behind that and then goes down to Palmer Coking Coal.
Right. So you see that orange border of the villages, that's butting up to the Diamond Glen. They've got that
right.
as a high-density residential area.
Yeah.
That's this little square of density residential.
Right there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's that little.
So we have
I mean, we've got a couple of options to consider. One, we just leave the mixed-use land use designation and we create a mixed-use zoning, a new zoning designation, which I don't recommend. I think it'll be really confusing. Yeah. Or two, we
figure out what the intent of that was.
Yeah, I mean, it looks to me like the intent was to allow for, actually, to allow to have commercial here, and then I think actually high density residential. I don't know why we just wouldn't put that on the put it that way on the map.
So which category would you use?
Well, I think I would use community. Well, I actually thought Dave changed my mind because I was really still thinking that the town center commercial would fit, but over here it doesn't. It might be bigger. It should probably be community commercial because it's going to serve, it's kind of close to Highway 169, even though it's tucked back. I think that it's supposed to serve the traveling.
Doesn't one of our policies require it be on the main arterial?
Well, they're going to blaze the main arterial.
Yes. Yeah. It says that it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be community commercial, may be located along major arterials such as SR 169, but access to the arterial should be limited to a combined access point. So yes, you're correct. I mean, the vision for the community commercial is that it would it doesn't say it has to be right on the highway, but it's supposed to be in proximity and accessible off the highway.
That would be appropriate commercial zone that are in
the I think that orange strip should be high. I think we should make that high density residential.
That's what it says on the map already.
Yeah, I think that and so then on the other side, the question is what to do with this pink that they said is commercial office retail. Commercial office retail.
What I recall. Yeah, there was some real high-density residential there, but what I also recall somewhere over there is being one of the other council members had a brainchild to have, commercial storefronts on the ground floor, maybe office space on the second floor, and apartments up above.
That's kind of what I was reading into it, too. Right?
And I mean, I don't know whether that's good or bad, indifferent, but it's kind of what I remember if one wants to look at the history.
So if we go back to the town center commercial, we know all three of these can be mixed use, according to the definition in the code. So, town center, it's, we could morph that a little bit and use that so that it allows existing residential uses and...
Commissioner Senek, mm-hmm. I was under the impression from reading all this that we were only going to have one town center.
Yeah,
the
gateway, the town center
overlay area.
The gateway overlay area is for the community commercial, but you're right. The town center, we were trying to make that a unique little area.
But don't you keep bringing up town center for this area up here we're talking about?
Yeah, because
there's nothing historical up there, is there?
No,
that's
no.
True. I thought we were doing community commercial or industrial for the top, the triangle.
So community.
And the other part, then you have to decide if it's going to be community commercial or residential.
The community commercial. So I think what we're saying, you're right, I did say that at first. I thought town, because we haven't gotten over to the other part. So I was thinking that we would just convert the mixed use and call it town center commercial. But you're right, the intent is just for
the old town.
Just for the old town. But the thing that bothers me about using the community commercial is it's supposed to be larger community. It's supposed to be larger development. And I don't know if that's what really would be happening here. They were going to have medium size kind of.
Well, you could use neighborhood.
Well, it also says oriented to the needs of the bordering public.
to just define mixed use for this piece? Or is that too confusing? I think the mixed use is really appropriate there. Because to me, doesn't sound like it fits into any of these other commercial categories.
So we can expand those rather than creating a new one. I mean, we can create a new one, or we can sort of massage one of these so that it makes it fit.
It's a very unique piece.
Yeah. So, and then when we look at the,
it occurs to me, I think that's where the transit center was supposed to go. And there was supposed to be this community, you know, sort of neighborhood commercial to service the transit center.
Oh, okay. So
that's kind of what I remember.
So
and then some rising apartments and pretty tight. Another thing that I sort of wanted to point out is, you know, it has under community commercial, it has lumber yards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lumber yards, like the ones that are indoors, that's one thing. But lumber yards that are outside, those are toxic waste dumps. And you have to do a toxic cleanup there. And I think maybe that might be that we might want to strike out of there, put in a more industrial area instead.
When we do our code, I have worked with a small city that was fighting having the lumber yard outside, just but more for aesthetic purposes.
Well, but also look at the reality, there's a lumber yard 3 miles away.
Yeah.
Are we going to have another one?
Yeah.
I think, though, but after talking it through, I think it really makes sense on this. So the triangle will designate. So this whole area right now that shows it's all just mixed use, it seems like it makes sense that the top of it would be industrial, like they have probably on their map. This west side would be community commercial, and then the east side, high-density residential, and that fits their map, consistent with their map. And then we're not creating a new zone, and that's, you know.
Well, so where's high-density
It's this little strip that butts up.
No, but I mean, we don't have a code.
We have high density residential.
Yeah, low density, medium density.
Third one down.
Medium density.
Well, we'll use medium. Well,
because I'm saying on this map, there is no high density.
You're right, we don't have I thought we had a high density. We've got the MDR 8 lets you get. So the medium density is that with bonuses, that can get pretty high.
Yes.
So me, yes. Sorry. MDR. So that would be MDR. My mistake. Yeah. So then on this part, now let's look at this along the Black Diamond Road, and you see they have
Auburn Black Diamond Road.
Yes, Auburn Black Diamond
Road. The far end of.
Auburn Black Diamond Road goes through and it's bisecting on the village's map where the southern part just says mixed use and the again, that commercial office retail. So they must have, I mean, we know that they want to put, we know they want to put commercial there and residential, and that it's really located kind of in the heart of their little, you know, their little cul-de-sac, you know, their
residential.
It's more, yeah, it's more like a neighborhood.
A neighborhood.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too. So that would be, I think that would be a good fit for that. What do you guys think?
There's no neighborhood commercial legend for this.
Neighborhood commercial?
No,
yeah. Oh,
there's
no.
There's two different legends.
Well,
so
that's
we're looking at, this one is out of the development.
That's out of the development.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, yeah.
This is what's going to, this map here, the big one, is that's going to end up going into the comp plan, correct?
Right, that's
oh,
right.
This is the one that says pedestrian and future transit access should be encouraged by providing shared parking and buildings. So that's this square one over here.
Mm-hmm. So the neighborhood commercial is where, and council member Morgan brought that, that she remembered that being a, she remembered that they had an area that was supposed to be for transit access.
Yeah, it's right there. It's in the second paragraph.
Yeah.
That's the only pedestrian that people transit access should be encouraged, but it's in the villages.
Yeah, it's not up on
it's
the
not, triangle. It's not up on the
69. But I still sort of think community commercial is better for that. I don't know why, but I guess because it's not a small-scale neighborhood area. It doesn't look like a small-scale neighborhood area.
Now, you back talking about the,
the
villages,
yeah.
Or are you talking the 169?
No, let's go back. I think we called it on the 169, but that's where Council Member Morgan said, oh, well, one of them is about transit.
Right, but that's this other one.
Yeah.
That's this one,
neighborhood
commercial.
Yeah, right.
So
I think neighborhood commercial on that would fit. I mean, it doesn't say they have to have transit, but it allows them a range of sort of the mixed use, mid-size commercial supermarket. I think that's one of the things they're trying to plan over there is a supermarket.
Right.
So,
So just looking online on the city webpage on the Lawson Hills, they have on the triangle they have two alternatives. So one alternative is mixed use, and the other is strictly commercial. So
on the triangle, it isn't industrial like we thought it was.
So it has. Okay. They haven't chose what alternative they're going to do. So they have two that they have decided on. But
so they may have a residential component or they may not is what they're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
They'll decide later.
Yeah, they'll decide later. Yeah.
What is it? And what's that from?
It's on under Lawson Hills.
It's under their development agreement.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I looked up the MPD.
I just typed in North Triangle, Lawson Hills.
Yeah. According to the MPD, it says that the North Triangle is proposed to provide approximately 35 acres designed for commercial office development sufficient to ensure that the MPD has a positive physical impact on the city and create jobs.
So that would be community commercial.
I think so. So the whole thing is going to be community commercial.
Yeah, because as you go down, it says a wide variety of retail, commercial, office, and civic uses are allowed within this category. And then it rattles off a bunch of different gift shop, drug stores, clothing stores,
well,
gas
good.
Stations.
Yeah, great.
Office use.
I think we solved that problem.
So what did we decide on for the rectangle that was part of that?
Well, the rectangle on the west side, we said, west side of that buffer would be community commercial. The east side butting up to the Diamond Glen would be the medium density residential. Yeah, they've got high density, but we don't have a high density. But the medium density residential allows for
high density.
One upper, one down.
Yeah. But they have to, you know, they have to do some things to get that density. So. Okay, great.
And that does provide a buffer as well.
It does, yeah.
Along 169 for that commercial. That's in the plan.
Yeah. Good. Well, great. Great, you guys. That's a good progress on that. So now we were on page 12, the designation criteria. We got through that, and I had a note in here that I needed to reorder them because they're not ordered
in the same way.
Exactly. And so then we moved to 13, and this is where we didn't start talking through these policies, so we need to get through these policies that aren't numbered incorrectly, but we'll just use the incorrect numbers. So land use policy 59 in our commercial areas, retain and enhance the existing commercial areas while providing sites large enough to accommodate significant commercial uses. And next one, provide day-to-day retail goods and services within walking distance of most residential neighborhoods. 61, encourage well-planned, coordinated commercial development within the SR 169 area and discourage strip retail development.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you discourage the strip retail development? To me, you drive down 169, that's what you've got, the strip malls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Well, even Old Town is just an old strip mall.
Exactly. I guess, unless you're talking architecturally, if you're doing mixed use where you've got retail, office space, and I thought we were only going up two stories. So whether it's retail and apartments or retail and office space, it's still going to look like a strip mall.
Yeah, the way that we have that gateway overlay is it makes it so that the business has to set back and they from the highway, and they have to provide some kind of a path or amenity in front of it. So there's some design guidelines and standards that are supposed to make it look less like a strip mall.
okay, so I'm going to use as an example in Maple Valley, where the Party Store is, right north of Kentucky Fried Chicken. The way that their rules were is that they couldn't have the parking lot in front right off the highway, so you have to drive around.
Right.
It's still just a big
open
building.
We have that sort of too.
Yeah.
So, the same thing struck me when I looked at it, and I wrote, the 169 strip needs to become part of an overall coordinated, probably commercial plan and gateway to more commercial behind it. So it's like it leads you into more commercial behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's commercial behind it.
Yeah.
Or will our design standards for that building make them look better than
what we've got
over at Diamond Square, which is just another big concrete building?
What we could do is we could say that it has to be more like a campus development, if you're making sure that the it's developed as a campus and not just as a strip along the block, that may help.
Got four buildings at all of them.
Well, you could have a major retailer on the frontage road and things piled up in the back.
Mm-hmm. But it's a tricky thing because I don't know the answer to it either. I mean,
there's ways that you can make it architecturally pleasing.
Mm-hmm. So the gateway overlay district and the design standards are the only thing that I can think of. I mean, because you don't want to nix out businesses entirely so if you started to say they had to have so much land so that they could develop it as like a campus, then that would probably really limit people from starting businesses.
Well, and even look at like at Diamond Square, that originally was going to be like
yeah.
two or three separate buildings, and then they were told that they had to build the second one first.
Yeah.
And that's all that's separate.
Anybody have some ideas on
behind it, I thought.
So maybe on this policy we want to put, instead of discourage strip development, because as you say, like, it doesn't, how are you really going to do that? We could put some language that it would have to meet the city's adopted design standards guidelines for the overlay district, the gateway district.
Each strip would have to be unique into itself.
Yeah.
And with police lights on a flashing.
Yeah.
We'll get decorated up for the holidays.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Okay.
So if I think
what's the recommended words?
I think if we say get rid of the and discourage strip retail
just put
development.
Yeah.
I think that's what we've got to work with. That's our tool, and then we maybe when we come back to refine that, we can refine those standards and look at how we can make sure that when they follow those standards, we don't end up with strip malls.
Well, and there are cities that have done a lot of work to make those businesses more pleasant looking from the street.
Right.
More street appealing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So 62, prioritize funding of infrastructure and community enhancement projects in the town center to encourage redevelopment and investment in this area. Next one talks about the town center should be the focus of concentrated housing growth that is compatible with the existing character of Black Diamond.
But that kind of contradicts 62.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. you're encouraging redevelopment, but you want to keep the existing character.
Mm-hmm. Community enhancement.
Well, are you talking, like apartments to go in an old town?
And then what again are we talking about town center?
So now I think we've really narrowed that town center. It means just a very special place.
Yeah.
It's only going to be to that.
So maybe
and it's going to be.
63.
Yeah. I don't think we need it.
Yeah, maybe we don't.
Yeah.
So maybe we should strike 63. Because we do say when we introduce it and define it. So community focal point, social cultural heart, protected, enhanced, and that we're going to encourage mixed uses and existing residential uses. So I think we probably don't need to have 63 at all.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
strike that.
64.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Residential, civic, retail,
commercial, office, entertainment, services, and hospitality services.
Okay, that's good. And so what about...
We spend a lot of time on the town center. Commercial areas, pedestrian oriented, and include buildings and nearby parks that symbolize the city center. Anybody have an issue with that?
It seems town center is, with all these specific things, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger because there's not that much room. Because I'm thinking town center is this.
It's just that little.
I mean, there's not a lot of
once you run out of land, you're out.
Area there for civic, retail, commercial, office, entertainment, services, meeting centers.
Yeah, we don't have very much town center at all.
I mean, the town center area should include all that.
Actually, the town center area should include events of residential, civic, and retail, and maybe commercial office entertainment, all of that stuff should be the
triangle.
Yeah, and not add that to here because we're not going to, we don't have space to do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So just say the town center area should include a mix of residential, civic, and retail. And that would kind of cover what
and
where we're at now.
So no. So if we say that, though, then we're saying we're not going to. There won't. We won't allow offices or services. I mean, because we've already got in our.
Well, there's no room for an inn or a meeting area.
Let's cross out hospitality services then, for sure. But I wouldn't get rid of the commercial office or.
I wouldn't get rid of them either.
Oh, because in the bakery, they're doing entertainment with their singing and dancing.
We're going to make some incompatible uses that already exist, I think.
Well, there is meeting rooms, but I don't know about inns.
I think that in the hospitality services.
A hospitality services.
Yeah, because you need, number one, you need space.
Yeah.
And if you're talking in.
But we do have meeting centers in the bakery.
I mean, one of the things that struck me is up above here somewhere where we talked about the uses. How do we get by, you know, as properties get developed in the Old Town area, how do we get buy-in from the property owners today to maybe do more of the old, because that was the main street of town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a big hotel where the parking lot at the Eagles is.
Mm-hmm.
That was the store. That was the general store and bank where the pizza place guys are. There were some other buildings down there too, but you sort of get the gist.
But that's where the design standards come in. So are you thinking that
Well, and then if hospitality services become bed and breakfasts in those houses around there as that develops by and by.
We don't really have a policy for old. Well, let's see.
And I'm thinking it kind of folds right into the design standards for the new school,
mm-hmm.
Recreating the old school that was there,
mm-hmm.
in that exact same spot. Just a thought.
I think if you want to have a vibrant downtown, you have to have mixed use of things that are down there so that the bakery, we already are lucky, is a destination from all over, and other mixed use things should be down there that are of interest economically to people coming through.
Mm-hmm. So I think on policy 64, I think it's okay. It has a mix of residential, civic. We're not saying we're going to expand it, but that gets to this idea that there could be infill that occurs there. So we're going to allow that. We're not going to kick the residential out, but if somebody wanted to redevelop, they could put a civic, retail, commercial, office, entertainment, services, and I think we should say and meeting centers, but just not put inns. I don't know.
Well, where would we have a hotel?
Yeah.
Sort of
overlay.
See, we're thinking. There is property on the very end of Railroad Avenue when it comes into Jones Lake,
yeah.
that could it be built into an inn, but it wouldn't be necessarily part of the old town.
Right.
So I don't see that there's property right in Old Town where it's designated now that there would be room to build any kind of an inn or motel.
So
or hotel.
Well, there is that. Stretch the old town out. There's a smokehouse in the antique shop. It's all black there. Yeah. That's not really big, though, and there's no parking. That would cause another. Yeah. That's an apple from that. So, Councilmember Deedy here. So, my understanding on Old Town is, so railroad, even the Eagles Hall, you know, all our land.
It stretches all that
all
way.
Up there. So, I mean, we have four lots that could be built on. So, so anybody could buy a house and turn it into a dentist's office or just an mm-hmm. office building or a bed and breakfast or something down there. So,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, leaving it
maybe
the way it is,
yeah,
it
yeah.
is perfect.
And bed and breakfast, you're right. I mean, we're thinking hotel, but an inn could be a very small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and this Councilmember Weber, do you really need to put inns and meeting centers and just leave it with hospitality services? Because the way I read that, you know, although it's under the town center, that's not very big. When you talk about hospitality services and you say inns and meeting centers, that's big.
Yeah,
hotels, big conference meeting type areas. That's not, you know, bed and breakfast.
I think
so. I would strike the
Airbnb.
There you go. So I would propose to strike the inns and meeting centers and just leave it hospitality
services. I think that's a great idea. Was everybody else listening?
Okay. And I'd be in favor of going to 65 just to take the town center part out and just put the pedestrian oriented to include buildings and nearby parks that symbolize the city center and include that with 64.
Okay. So include, merge 65 and 64.
Oh, and should be pedestrian oriented.
Yeah. I like that. We're talking about the community commercial areas and that the parking should be to the sides and rear, not in the front. So that's that policy that says no parking lots in the front. Everybody okay with that?
Let's see. Well,
we have parking in the front, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is no rear parking anywhere.
There's no place to go.
They are all in the front.
But then it also decides on, or depends on where they lay the streets out in this triangle area that's going to be community commercial.
I just don't think you can put that in there. That's another one I think we need to take out.
I think so. We can rely on our design standards.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Agreed.
Yeah, because the whole point of having side and rear parking is for the aesthetics of it.
Yeah.
You've got that, you know, you're going to have that big buffer along 169, so it's kind of a moot point to even have that.
Okay, we're just going to strike 66 then. So 67, require cross access between sites to reduce the number of driveways along arterial streets and with pedestrian connections between the sites.
Okay, so my comment is, can you explain that?
Yeah.
Because you know, if you're talking about,
do I still have that white pad here?
No,
okay.
It's gone. But on Railroad Avenue, as you're heading south and you're starting to go down the hill, there's houses there with driveways that have been there forever. That's not going to change, probably in.
You know what's missing? You know what's missing in this is the we're not talking about residential. We're talking about in commercial.
Now,
commercial
I'm,
development.
I'm reading that to be similar to what's going on between Barry Congle's place, the community center, the grocery store.
That kind of a road.
Mm-hmm.
That you could drive. You could get off 169 and just drive.
Well,
all the
yeah.
Way
at
to
some
that.
Point, there's going to be that connector road. But,
yeah, so it needs to say commercial development will require cross.
Okay.
A lot of places down the Kent Valley, each business lot has a buffer so that you have to go back out onto the street just to go to the next lot.
Yeah.
And so that would be nice to get rid of that.
Yeah.
It's kind of. Might not be on the same subject, but if you're heading north, going to work in the morning, and you think you might want something for breakfast, you don't go to Burger King because you have to go all the way into Fred Meyer and back around. So it makes it more beautiful, but it's lousy for business. So I never go there because of that. McDonald's, I can go. So we want to beautify things, but going to make it hard for business too. Just saying.
Well, we still have our design standards, so we could just eliminate that one too.
We actually could, I think so. What
were you
going to
say?
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Erica?
Well, it's just the same thing as the rest of us are saying. I think that was an idea that came from Rural by Design, and a lot of people picked it up, and I think it's really cool. If Black Diamond doesn't have to adopt that part, the part that talks about having the parking in, on the other side and making these driveways. And I mean, the truth of the matter is the reason that the businesses can't make it at Diamond Square is because you can't drive through that parking lot, because it's a psychological thing, and we need to consider that. People will not go into your building if they haven't been able to drive through the lot in one gate and out another at least probably for most people 10 times, and then they probably go into your park and maybe don't even get out of their car the first few times, and then they'll go into your store and walk around it. She's nodding. And just leave. It's a psychological thing. People need to do that in order to feel like they want to hand over money there, which is after all what you know the commercial wants.
You can go right in McDonald's. You can get off, go into McDonald's, and I get back on some other street.
Given
this,
why they get more money.
That's right.
So I think we should strike 67, and given this, that's going to be a real, when we look at our design standards, we need to think about that, whether or not we're creating a bad business environment by trying to.
Yeah, because if Diamond Square had an entrance and an exit, you could go through, you could go to the coffee stand, you could do something, and you could come back out to the other entrance.
Yeah.
It's not very client friendly.
And the state's going to have a lot to say about that anyway, as most
the
of that property
point
is right on the highway.
Yeah.
So it's certainly they will decide about access.
Well, the whole premise is to limit the number of, you know, in and out driveways along them. Yeah, because that's a safety problem.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do that without forcing.
But you know, that's a really good point too. When you start talking about safety, and I go to Diamond Square. That's where I get my hair cut. I don't have a problem driving in, parking a car, getting hair done, and coming right back out the same way I went in. But if there's an emergency, and they cut off that road, that driveway, there's no other way to get out.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good point. And it's been one of my bugaboos with all these big developments that have gone on for the last 50 years around here, is they'd have one way in and out.
Yeah.
And use Sammamish and Issaquah Highlands for many, many years, up when, what was the name of that? Quahani first went in, there was one way in and one way out for probably 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So we need to avoid that.
Okay. So then the last one just says that we're going to encourage mixed uses in all commercial areas, which I think is good policy.
It's also positive, and that's the other thing we need to be paying attention to here. We don't want negative things in here. We want to turn those around into positives.
Right. So
no
we got
from the peanut gallery.
Is there so before we leave the commercial policies, is there anything that we really missed? Is there something that really needs to be in here that we missed?
Shop local.
Yeah? So true.
No, I just said shop local.
I wish we could make a policy for that.
Yes, but we have to have the businesses here so that we can shop local.
We've got to try to attract them. We need to do some economic development.
So Councilmember Judy here. So just a reminder, because I do see Brenda struggling with who's talking, so just a friendly reminder, everybody please say your name when you start talking, and maybe, yes, be called upon so that we can hand the mic over to everybody so everybody gets on. so Brenda's not struggling with headphones or whatever trying to hear us.
Yeah. So moving on to 5.7, regional coordination. We are committed to coordinate with the county and other our neighbors. So we've got goals for how we're going to do that. So coordinate land use and development actions with government agencies, adjacent jurisdictions, and tribes as appropriate. And then,
Barb?
Yeah.
This Councilmember Weber, did we pass up 566 under public, the last part?
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I just flipped the page and skipped it. So let's go back, bottom of page 13, 566. So the public designation, that is properties that are under public ownership, either the city or governmental entities. They are currently used or intended for uses for parks or elementary schools. The public designation on the comp plan map is going to include the city's watershed. So in the policies for the public.
So what about the library?
Library will be public. So, the library will. So anything that is owned by the city or governmental entities, or it's used for any public use. So the library should be on there. Mm-hmm. So the policy 69, public uses should respect the neighborhood and district context in which they are proposed, by adherence to the city's design guidelines and zoning code. Sometimes when you get these public agencies, I mean, they have their own authorities, and so that coordination piece is important.
Since you just came past this, one of the things that I'm thinking is it's a policy because of the way the land is, et cetera, that the school ground is used by the public when it's not school time.
Mm.
And I'm thinking that it might be a good policy for us to have for other schools, for their school grounds also to be open to the public when it's not school time, just to increase our access to developed play fields, et cetera.
Yeah, I was trying to get at that to the extent that we can. In 71 by saying that public buildings should fulfill their role as gathering areas and community resources. That's what I was trying to say with that.
Okay, cool. So Councilmember Deedy here. So I don't know if you can make a public school, Enumclaw School District, open their land that they pay all the insurance on to cover any accidents on their property, to open it up to now have a city say that it's going to be used for everybody. So then would the city then have to pay for that insurance? I mean, I know that up there right now, mm-hmm. they have a sign. It's really just for school use. It is not open, you know, the playground area. Really isn't open to the public, but the public does use it. The ball field is open to the public. It is open for the baseball and stuff like that, but it's still the school ground.
Well, at this school here, I'm pretty familiar. At this school here, that public ground that's the ball field, that is for public use on the same kind of a deal as the school is for school use, but that's to the citizens of the city of Black Diamond, and it actually belongs to Palmer Coking Coal, and if we don't use it that way, they can take it back.
And I, Mayor Benson, I believe that it goes all the way to the fence up to the school, that all that property belongs to Palmer Coking Coal, up to the fence.
So it's designed for public use.
Right.
Well,
but
I would say, Councilmember Deedy, here that it would be good for Barbara to go to the school district and ask them if it is something that the city can state is open to the public and that is not just the school district's responsibility to carry insurance on that.
It's you know,
I'm sure there is.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
There's a contract. If it isn't open to the public, they can take it back.
Right. But I'm talking about the other. I'm not talking about just this school. I'm talking about other schools in the future. And what I'm saying is, in the city of Black Diamond is not the city of Enumclaw. We can have a different standard in the city of Black Diamond. I know that other schools in other towns, the school grounds are open to the public, whether they belong to the school system or not, because of the same thing that Barb just said. Because they're public grounds and they're supported by public money. And evidently the insurance companies have figured out some way to handle it, if you ask them.
So, you know, we're talking about libraries and parks and all kinds of things. So these three policies were just trying to say that, first of all, if they're going to be nested in a neighborhood, they need to be compatible with the neighborhood. Secondly, they need to be compatible with our heritage and, you know, our qualities. So, you know, and then third, that public buildings, you know, their role is to be gathering areas for community. So that policy, what it would do is not trying to force another governmental special purpose district into something, but it would rather provide a pathway for partnership between the city and that agency to be able to do something. That's what that policy is intended to do.
There we go. Councilmember Weber, so as far as that access issue, if we can't put it in here, that's something that could be handled possibly maybe by like an interlocal agreement even to use.
A shared use agreement or something. Sure.
Yeah, and also on 71, is there a reason why 70 is public buildings and spaces and 71 is only public buildings?
No, I think it should also say in spaces. I think that's a good comment.
You know, because, mm-hmm. you know, ball fields are prime examples. Mm-hmm. What do we use the ball fields for, you know?
Yep.
The different activities and meeting areas.
Absolutely. No, that's good. That should say public buildings and spaces on 71.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Pepper here. Do the cemeteries count as a public space?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They sure do.
I think we need to qualify that.
Because our cemetery is a public cemetery. Not every city has a public cemetery. A lot of them are privately owned.
Yeah, But
the cemetery districts are special purpose districts. They're kind of a quasi-governmental.
Ours is actually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But the National Cemetery is not available all the time, and they lock their gates.
Right. So are we ready to move on to 5.7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So regional coordination. So this just says that we're going to be, you know, we're really going to work with our partners, other government partners, to try to, and this is sort of a GMA requirement anyway, but to try to make sure that if there's, you know, environmental issues don't respect municipal boundaries, number one, transportation problems cross municipal boundaries. The other thing is in regional coordination is that there are some types of big land uses, for example, dumps and prisons, things of that nature that have to be sited for a whole region. And so the local government and the state and everybody kind of needs to get together and coordinate where that might be. So we're saying that in policy 72, that we're going to use the countywide planning policies and the Vision 2040 to base our regional coordination and land use decisions, which we do. Not really, mm-mm. But we have to say it.
73 is monitor implementation of the comprehensive plan for changed conditions in the city's anticipated growth, consistency with the city's vision, GMA requirements, countywide planning policies, the PSRC Vision 2040, and make amendments. This is just saying, this kind of gets back to what Council Member Weber was saying with the MPDs and things like that. It's like, well, things happen, and moving forward, our growth, or if our vision changes, or if the GMA requirements change, or King County adopts some new planning countywide policy, we will amend our plan accordingly. That's all that it says. And 74, coordinate with other governmental jurisdictions to site when necessary. This is the planning jargon, essential public facilities. So that's your prisons, that's your dumps, that's your things that every region has to have them. They're essential. Nobody wants them. Some places do want them, but they can be difficult to site because they have such site-specific requirements. And so we're going to coordinate with our jurisdictions to figure that out. 75, policy 75, we're going to conduct appropriate public review and hearing processes, including environmental impact assessments and statements where appropriate, to ensure regional input on the siting of certain development activities.
So, and what I noticed in your policy 74, mm-hmm. meet this last line, meet the needs of the city's present and future growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that just the city's future growth isn't the regional's future growth, and I'm thinking that maybe needs to...
I think that should say the region's. Mm-hmm. I think that's much better. Thank you. Yeah. And then the last policy in the regional coordination, 76 on the top of page 15, ensure that essential public facilities cited in the city are consistent with the goals, objectives, and policies in our comprehensive plan. So moving on to the open space part of this land use element. The open space is going to be an overlay, and you'll see that overlay on the land use map. And it's based on the city's vision and land use patterns. Open space is essential to the quality of life. Cornerstone of the open space plan is the identification and preservation of environmentally sensitive areas. Community-valued open space and treasured areas, buffers and separators, public parks, private parks, recreation, community facilities, trail network, all of those are describing what you're going to see in our open space network. We're going to do a coordinated network of all these things and map them. And so we have some policies about the open space network because we haven't really done much with that. We've talked about it. There's a lot in the past, but we're going to really start moving, I think, in a direction of implementing that open space network. So 77 policy is to use the open space system as the primary unifying component of the comprehensive plan. We talk a lot about how the way that the city developed and how we're surrounded by all of these open space areas, and we want to maintain that so that we just don't take them all down and become this, flat sea of development. So we're gonna build around these areas and integrate. So policy 78 is integrate all significant natural areas, the wetlands, the streams, steep slopes, geologic hazards, floodplains, into the open space overlay.
Barb?
Yep.
Council Member Edelman, do we somewhere in here want to talk about working with King County? Because when you start talking trail systems,
mm-hmm.
there's the Cedar to Green
yeah.
trail, which is huge.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that really addressed in here. Maybe I missed it.
No, but it's not. That's...
But there's a lot of, and especially when you start looking at Highway 169 right now with the parking lots that King County, because of their parks bond, have been able to build in the last couple of
yeah.
years.
I think it's going to be more important for us to make sure that we recognize that they've got some say in, because some of these trails are King County trails.
Right, and we want to tie in into and them and make them part them. Of our network.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They've been working for years on that.
So we should add a policy about that, I think. Okay. I'm not, anyone have any wording to suggest, or you want me just to go do something and bring it back?
Yeah, it's much easier probably for you to come up with something.
Okay.
Yeah, way easier.
Yeah, so I'll add that.
I've done things.
So, so 78 talked about what's going to be on when, on the open space overlay. 79 says that, and we're going to use that to protect our surface and groundwater.
Mm-hmm. Barb, I just wanted to point out 78 has a 100-year floodplain. You know, I'm on all these water boards. The 100-year floodplain is being inundated about every 5 years now. So it's now 500, soon to be a 1,000-year floodplain.
So did you want to change? I mean, I still think of it as the 100-year floodplain. Did you want to change that, or are you okay with the language that is written?
I think we need to move it up.
Commissioner Senecal, I don't understand what you said.
The wetland boundary that can be in that one needs to be prepared to have impending floods on.
For 100-year floods
is now happening about every 2 to 5 years in most areas of the county.
But it's still a standard 100-year flood.
What I'm telling you is that the standard is moving to 500, and it's soon going to move up to 1,000.
Well, what we could do, what FEMA is calling it now actually, is they're starting to call it a flood hazard area.
Right.
So how about if we just change 100-year floodplain to say and flood hazard areas? Would that be okay?
That'd be good.
Okay. So on 80, protect and enhance the dominant natural features and open space structures, including gateways, viewpoints, and view corridors that characterizes the city. 81. Protect the city's historical sites and structures by connection to the open space system. Just interrupt me. I'll just kind of keep going through. 82, plan for and retain a natural vegetation buffer around the perimeter of the city adjacent to unincorporated rural designated land. The buffer may vary in width based upon sensitive areas and other constraints. Once established by development, this buffer is to be permanent. Development adjacent to the buffer is encouraged to combine other open space features with the urban-rural buffer. That's saying that we're not going to allow Black Diamond to just mush into every place else. We're going to always have a defining edge to the city, and it's going to be defined by our buffer for our open space, for our natural. Well, it's going to vary on what we're buffering. So if it's a wetland that has different, if it's stream corridor, if it's wetland, there are different buffer widths around requirements.
But there's no minimum. Like, let's say there's no streams involved or sensitive areas, or what's the minimum buffer?
Yeah.
They all have different buffers.
So then it would be a setback.
They have different setbacks, depending on if it's a screening or a lane.
No, I'm saying if there's none of that involved.
Then it's just a setback.
At the area of the city's perimeter you're talking about, all it is forest. Do we have a policy for what the minimum buffer would be?
Well, yeah, we're going to line up coal cars. It's going to be the width of a coal car all the way around the city. No. How about that? You know, that's a really good point. And I think what we'd have to lean on then would be the setback requirement for the whatever zone it is, which there is a minimum, I think it'd be like 20 feet. but I think
when you change zones, there's a
So in the case where there wouldn't be any sensitive area at play, then you'd look at the minimum setback required, and then you would condition that approval of that permit that setback had to be, if it's an adjacent to that rural area, you'd have to condition that setback is left in its natural state on the permit.
Because it seems like it would happen more between Black Diamond and the west mm-hmm. side of Maple Valley
Councilmember Edelman.
Let me give you a real life example. Mm-hmm. Okay, west of town in the villages, there is going to be, and it's already been approved through King County, is a reserve at Woodlands. So if we've got our 20-foot setback for open space, green space, whatever, is the county, because that's county, it's not city property, would they have another buffer on their side of another like 20 feet?
We couldn't require that.
Mm-mm.
No, we would just have our 20 feet. Okay. That we would be requiring from our property owner.
If we had a responsible developer, then they would maybe add to that buffer. Okay.
Councilmember
Morgan. So I don't know if you've looked, and I've only looked from driving by on the road, but back there against Horseshoe Lake, you know, they have that scraped out now, and I don't really know what the plan is, but I know that there's like a steep bank, just a steep open bank going down the property line, and I'm wondering if it's going to stay like that, if something's going to happen to stabilize that bank, and it looks to me like it goes right down the property line, and then I'm also thinking, I think that the county has the trail going through there, doesn't it?
Right on
the edge. So how much of that is, I'm curious.
Well,
I'm curious at how this is working than anything else.
But that is, I know, but that's why that policy, that 100-foot trail. Yeah, King County is 100-foot trail.
Trail is a whole separate issue there.
Yeah,
there's a 100-foot trail there. But that's why we add the policy that, as Mayor Benson suggested, to make sure we're coordinating this with King County. Yeah.
And what about Commissioner Amley? What about, plan for and retain natural vegetation buffer around the perimeter? So if there are currently unnatural vegetation, blackberries,
yeah.
Scotch broom, are we going to require that those be removed and then natural stuff put in? I mean, is that what LU 82 indicates?
We could use it that way. It would be awfully difficult, but like if we had a site plan approval, if we had the type of development where they had to have site plan approval, then we would be able to have a landscape plan. In most cases, your developer has to cut down trees and have some kind of a replanting plan. So, I mean, I think this one was really difficult to do. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The more you think about all the scenarios that could happen, I think it's going to be really difficult. But this says that we're going to try, and maybe we won't be able to do it all the time. But I think it's worth planning for.
Commissioner McCain, I think there would probably be some pushback from people with private property rights mm-hmm. having to arbitrarily then set aside another 10 or 20 feet of their property for an additional buffer.
Oh, it wouldn't be an additional buffer. It would be the existing buffer. Yeah, we're not saying they have to set aside an additional buffer.
So we would just defer to the regular side front that setback,
yeah,
and not require anything additional.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
As the perimeter of the city, which
right.
is kind of what Commissioner Senecal, how we got started on this conversation.
Yeah.
Councilmember Weber, when they were running that reserve at the Woodland and like whoosh, real quick, don't hold me to this, but I believe reading in that there was a 300-foot buffer between the reserve and the west side of the building.
I think you're right, and that just made me think of another thing that when we get a SEPA from another city that they're going to do a development, that and the city needs, we need to step up to the plate and say to them when we look at their SEPA that this is what we would like to see them do to buffer along the city. So that would be a way that we can't require another jurisdiction, but we could at least come to the table and through the SEPA process. We may not get it, but that's the way the SEPA process should be used. So on 80, did we want to do, I mean, 82 is a mouthful, and it's a hard thing to do, but do we want to try to keep that in there? And okay. 83, encourage the preservation and protection of open space through a variety of approaches that respect the landowner's commitment to the property, including transfer of development rights, open space tax incentives, cluster development, public land acquisition, conservation easement, and other public and private initiatives. So it's not all going to be on the private property owner. I mean, if we see something that has really value, then we've got to offer something in exchange.
I'm sorry, Commissioner McCain, I just have a question about that respect the landowner's commitment to the property.
Yeah,
can anybody better define that?
How about rights?
Property rights has a whole different provenance than commitment.
I think landowner's property rights sounds the best.
I don't think we should put property rights in here.
Why?
Because it's like a, it's kind of like a red flag. Councilmember Pepper.
But that's what it is.
How?
It's property rights.
It is property rights.
How about we just say that respect landowners?
Right.
I would agree with that.
Wouldn't you love to be respected?
Yeah.
So is that just going to read landowner property?
That approaches that respect the landowner, that respect landowners, including TDR.
That doesn't say property rights. That doesn't make sense. That's
okay.
You're leaving something out.
Okay. We are.
Respect the landowner's
property owners? How about respect property?
Landowner's property rights.
Not, please, though, I don't agree with that. So, Councilmember Pepper.
Okay, but you need to define why you don't agree with that.
Because it's a red flag. When you say property rights,
yeah. Well, you have the right to do what you want on your property.
Let me try to help. This is Erica. Let me try to help Councilmember Pepper. Yeah, okay. What I'm thinking is there are certain property owners who've signed covenants on their property. Mm-hmm. Those are that go with the property. Those are also part of their commitment to their property. I'm thinking like Bryant's in their forest over there. And there's other covenants that people have signed also on their property, even here around town.
Those are still
property
rights.
Property rights. I guess we'll have to take a vote.
No, no. This is preliminary discussion, and Councilmember Pepper does not agree with putting property rights in there.
Why you can't just say I don't like it.
No, I didn't say I don't like it. I said I don't agree.
Okay.
And I don't agree because the word property rights is a red flag for a lot of people having certain really strong feelings about things. And I think commitment to property is good, and if we can think of something else, that's great. But I'm not going to vote on that.
Okay, well, how about everybody else votes?
No, this is preliminary.
This is still a democracy.
We have to come to
and the majority rule.
So all those people of our property
We are not, this is a preliminary
you are
discussion.
Not in charge.
But this is a preliminary discussion only, and we don't take votes.
All those in favor of property rights, raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Those in, not in favor, raise their hand. One, two, three.
Well, there's
got to
be a different way to say it.
Yeah, there's
got to
be. Let me think about it.
Because if you have rights, it's not a matter of respecting them. They are your rights, whether they're respected or not. So.
Commitment seems like commitment's just way too vague. Commitment to what? Commitment to the public use? Private use.
Commitment to destruction.
But the thing is, if they have an agreement with having it in forested lands or have it where they've had to waive their property taxes because of that forested land, those are property rights. And so when somebody else comes in and buys their property, they have to go with those property rights or somebody's going to have to pay the tax.
Why can't we just, this whole policy is about encouraging approaches.
Mm-hmm.
To accomplish this, so why do we even need,
maybe we don't even need that.
That whole sentence? Encourage the preservation and protection of open space through a variety of approaches, including TDR, open space incentives, cluster development.
I think that is a great idea. So 83, we're going to strike that all out. We're just going to say, encourage the preservation and protection of open space through a variety of approaches, including TDRs, open space tax incentives, cluster development, public land acquisition, conservation easements, and other public and private initiatives. Good job.
Okay.
Policy 84, develop a stewardship plan for open space. Now this one, let's think about this one. It would be great, but it would take cities, money. A stewardship plan would identify techniques and ways to maintain and enhance the active and passive open space areas that lie outside the protected environmentally sensitive areas. The stewardship plan may rely on community involvement to implement. So this is putting the city on the hook to develop a plan for stewardship plan for open space, which I think is a lovely idea, but is it realistic that we would want to have a policy to do that, to try to implement that?
Was that in there before?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no time limit on that.
No.
Councilmember Pepper, I think that we do have, don't we have the Lakeshore group that helps protect that lake?
That's just
a stewardship kind of thing.
That's not a city level. That is a separate.
But it does say rely on community involvement. Okay,
but
so.
That's secondary.
Okay, but as we grow, I think that it's important that we have this avenue for people to care for the.
But we have got. I would see if I can find the old stuff. It's the pros: parks, recreation, and open space.
Councilmember Edelman, we already have a document called Parks, Recreation, and Open Space, which was incorporated, I believe, by reference into the 2009 comp plan. It currently exists. That's where this would feed in.
So that plan was already...
It's already a document. It's already a document. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't
read that document for a couple of years, but I know it exists.
It's just a question of whether we want a policy addressing stewardship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Question: what is stewardship?
What in your...
Are you going to go pull the weeds, take out all the invasive species, make sure people aren't throwing beer cans in there?
You can use the Lake Sawyer Foundation, the Northern Park Foundation, as an example of a school.
It's like what Tammy and Brock do to that little strip out by, on Roberts Drive, or use somebody would have to do that to all the open space in the city of Black Diamond if you want this.
Or put together kind of community work parties or something.
Well,
like
and
that.
We already do that
yeah.
a couple of times a year.
I think we could delete this. I think the sensitive areas ordinances already describe what we can and cannot do with a lot of this space. Rather than get the city involved with the stewardship plan, we have to monitor and keep up with.
Councilmember Pepper disagrees. I think that it is incumbent on us to care for our land and where we live. And I think that this doesn't demand that we actually have it right this minute, but I think that the opportunity should be there for stewardship of our community.
Well, but I think it should change it to develop.
Yeah, I think it does.
Encourage
the development, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Encourage instead of develop.
Encourage the development of a stewardship plan. I like that.
And you're in charge of all the volunteers.
But that's good. And so then somewhere down the road, I mean, maybe there'll be some grant funds to put together such a plan. And then we have a policy.
Well, yeah, the Lake Sawyer Parks Foundation got some grants. They got $12,500.
Yeah.
So they're going to be doing some interpretational training.
I guess what needs to happen.
Councilmember Edelman, what needs to happen is we need to go dredge up that PROS plan and look and see at some point that it probably needs to be revised and updated. But it does exist.
I know it does, for sure. Yes, ma'am. I got to find it. Aaron Nix was doing it. That was part of his job.
Okay. Well.
This is Councilmember Weber. I like the rewriting of that. And also, you know, this is a 20-year forecast out, right?
Right.
It could be short term, long term. So
yeah,
I think it's good that it stays there.
Good. I think so. I like the way it was rewritten too. It doesn't actually put us. I mean, it's out there that this is something that we. It's kind of a value statement too, in a way,
yeah.
for all of us. So that's a good thing. 85, policy 85 on the top of page 16. Regularly review the Black Diamond Area Open Space Protection Agreement approved in 2005. And I don't know why it says will actively. And actively investigate and enforce any violations of the agreement.
Can you expand on that, Barbara? For us?
Well, we have to make sure that we're upholding. This is to say that we have a policy that we will uphold that open space agreement. So I don't like the actively investigate and enforce. I would like to change the wording on that one. So
can we just strike that and we'll actively enforce that part of the sentence?
To ensure... I think yes. I just say to ensure that it's being upheld or
yeah.
something.
Well, approved in 2005, period, and then delete that other part.
Well, why are we reviewing
regularly
it?
Regularly review.
Yeah, regularly review it.
So, why are we regularly reviewing it? To make sure that we're upholding it. Go ahead, Council.
This Councilmember Weber, just if you put a period behind 2005, the way I read that, is that you're regular. Sure, you're going to regularly review the Open Space Protection Agreement that was approved in 2005. Okay, mm-hmm. So you reviewed it, but what's the point of having a protection agreement if you don't use it?
And monitor and enforce.
Well, Commissioner Amber, depending on...
Thank you. Depending on what the protection agreement says, there may be remedies in that agreement for things that we review and find out of place.
So
Councilmember Pepper, does anybody have any history on this, of why this is written this way? Does anybody know?
Well, it was from it's a carryover, so I'm guessing that it was probably this is a pretty solid guess, that it was required as evidence that we were going to uphold our end of the deal when we signed that agreement. Right. Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe regularly review the open space protection agreement to ensure that it is upheld or something like that.
To ensure compliance.
To ensure compliance. So that's good, because that word then, if we find that it's not compliant, that implies that we're gonna do something. We're gonna go to the open space police. So, policy 86.
Barb.
Yes.
This is Councilmember Weber. Just to clarify, if I have it written down correctly, the policy is gonna read. Regularly review the Black Diamond Open Space Protection Agreement approved in 2005 to ensure
compliance
of the agreement.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
With the agreement of the yeah. Okay. 86 lands identified as open space areas include the following: all known environmentally sensitive areas as regulated by the city. Lands adjoining the Rock Creek, Ginder Creek, Lawson Creek, Ravensdale Creek, and other riparian corridors. The following lakes: Jones Lake, Black Diamond Lake, Frog Lake, Lake Marjorie, also known as Oak Lake, Lake Sawyer, and the land perimeters of those lakes when not subdivided. All existing and proposed public parks and open spaces, identified historical sites and structures, King County and City Identified Wildlife Habitat Corridors.
Mm-hmm. So, Engineer Eckert, is the identified historical sites and structures in the open space? That doesn't make sense to me.
Historical sites and structures aren't...
Structures or open spaces?
Well, we're saying that we would identify lands that had those things on them and try to protect them.
Talked about that on the previous page.
Yeah.
Already. It's page 15, LU 81. Picked up cities, historical sites, and structures by connections to the open space system. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's kind of redundant.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll take out that bullet. Actually, the whole thing is kind of redundant. I think the whole policy is kind of redundant, actually, because we've already said that. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Councilmember Pepper, I am reading. I may be incorrect here, but policy LU 85, right above it, says identify Black Diamond's areas open space. Mm-hmm. Now, there's LU 86. It says lands identified as open space. So does that follow that they're identifying the open space that will be protected? I mean,
are
they connected?
There are open space lands in addition to those that are part of the open space agreement. Does that answer your question? So we've got our open space, Black Diamond area. Open. You know what? Those words are out of order. Black Diamond area? Open
space. I mean, they're capitalized in 85 as though they are something, but in 86 they're not capitalized. So I just wanted to know, are they related?
Yes, the capitalizing of the open space, that is the title, that's the proper name of this agreement.
So are these things all listed? No,
not all of them. I mean, it identifies certain areas in the agreement, but we have additional areas under our sensitive area ordinance that aren't in the agreement.
Well, so maybe you could check it out and make sure this isn't redundant.
Well,
Well, I was thinking not that it was redundant with 85, but just that it's redundant in general because we've already said, we've already mentioned all those in the previous, yeah. I mean, it lists the corridors and the lakes and things, but I don't know how necessary that is to do. Just saying, we could leave it or.
Well, is there? We are going to be working on an open spaces overlay.
That we are going to. I mean, we have that. We're going to bring that out in its own map. We're going to map them.
If we're going to have that as part of the comp plan, can't that reside there instead of your list?
Councilmember Pepper, I do like the specificity in 86, but I do have a question about, is it used elsewhere? And I guess I would, until we have further information, I would like to leave it. But maybe put a question mark by it to see if we're handling it another way.
Well, yeah. Back to Commissioner Senegal. So we aren't going to identify these areas. They are already identified in our open space map. So I'm not really sure what this policy was trying to do, to be honest with you. I mean, we've already identified in our sensitive area ordinance, we've already identified known environmentally sensitive areas and mapped them, as well as the riparian corridors and the lakes and the parks. Maybe it would make more sense to me if we said that we're going to make sure and continue mapping new open space areas as they become known, or say new parks. That would make more sense to me.
May I?
Yes.
It seems like it would be, Commissioner Senegal, it seems like it would be more appropriate to put something here just like there is down under 5-8 shoreline where it says there's a shoreline master program and a map of shoreline jurisdiction is shown in figure XX. Well, couldn't we put up here there is an Black Diamond area open space protection map,
yeah,
which will be updated, see figure XX.
Yeah, I think that's good. But I do think we should say something like, and it's our policy to identify new ones, you know, new things are going to come online. And map them. So when new parks come up, for example, or we get a new wetland report, now we know there's a new wetland area, then it's been identified and we need to update our map. Basically, that's what our policy would be. Okay. So then, my gosh, we're down to the last bit. 5-8, the shoreline management. And anybody have any comment on what's written there?
Is figure XX going to be a definitive?
Yeah, all the figures, they'll all have figure numbers. Numbers, tables, and figure numbers, but yeah. Yep. Excess. That's the end of our land use chapter. So we're just doing great.
I would expect